Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, I've neglected for the last few weeks to point out that this program at the beginning of December entered its 28th year of disservice to the global community. So I remember today. And speaking of people who put things off, kudos. Are those what you send? To the Los Angeles dog trainer for taking only 8 days to correct the story that some guy claimed he had created Judith Owen's fabulous 12 Days of Christmas audience participation stunt that she's directed, created and directed year after year around the world. Yeah, he claimed he created it. And the LA Times, Dog Trainer printed it. And as I say, took only 8 days to correct it because that's hard to verify. But they did have a good excuse for the delay. According to my sources, several of the high-ranked editors there weren't aware that the paper still published daily. But happy birthday to Judith. She's got her honor back. And as for the nameless guy who claimed not only plagiarized something, but claimed he created it, happy New Year, you lying sack of... Hello, welcome to...
2010, the year in rebuke.
Sheetrock. And ladies and gentlemen, 2010... receding in the year in the rearview mirror just as rapidly as the year just passed. That's wacky. And who can forget the greatest environmental disaster in American history so far? Well, we can't for at least another 15 minutes.
Direct from the electronic trading floor of Corium Slocum Oliver, this is Mind Your Own Business. I'm Mike Tuccinello on the virtual trading floor. Greece is in the skillet and all of Europe is trying to turn down the flame on the stove of debt. And the main cook in that economic kitchen is Germany. We all know what that means, something indigestible in the financial system of the Eurozone. While savvy investors flee the bonds of Europe like a new arrival at Ellis Island, they're also warily eyeing the financial status of good old Uncle Sam. The Chinese, with their own housing bubble staring them straight down the barrel, are beginning to wonder if it's time to sell some of their trillions in U.S. debt. And if that happens, the savvy investor will be heading for the fruit cellar for the summer. President Obama declared it a ridiculous spectacle, the drama of three companies fighting over responsibility for the oil mess in the Gulf of Mexico. And over at the Money Honey Desk, Sylvia Meal Argent has the newly appointed head of British Petroleum's Task Force Gulf Cleanup now as her guest.
Thanks, Mike. Simon Pants took over his position at BP just this week after spearheading other corporate rescue operations, including the notorious Latin American launch of Yellow Coke just last year. Simon, I guess you hit the water running.
Or sliding. Thanks, Sylvia. Yes, indeed. Difficult time to come on board, but that's what we in the corporate rescue design field do.
You first gained fame in the industry when you tackled the problem of tainted mouthwash in Canada.
That's correct. Somehow we never really found out how salmonella had contaminated all of the large bottles of Minterine, which at the time was Canada's best-selling mouthwash. Absolutely owned the market for green mouthwash, which at the time was the largest segment of the Canadian mouthwash sector.
Well, how did you extricate Minterine from that near disaster?
Easier than it sounded. We changed the color to blue and spent $100 million convincing Canadians that blue mouthwash was better than green.
Well, nothing that easy in the Gulf of Mexico, I'd imagine.
I shouldn't think so, no. An unfortunate series of false starts, I'm afraid. Rather put the company on the back foot, as we say.
Which means?
Off the front foot, I should think.
So far, everything your company has tried to stop the discharge of oil seems to have failed. Is this impacting the brand?
Well, it is. It can't help but do, and so we're taking a very proactive approach. You may recall BP did a virtual renaming a few years back when we were positioned as pro-environmental. Mm-hmm. We branded BP as Beyond Petroleum.
But recently you've returned to the legacy name.
We have. And now it's associated in the public mind, our research tells us, with a certain degree of hubris, of arrogance, and of haplessness. We feel our most urgent need is to recast the company brand once more. And we're going to be doing that starting this week with some creative that really takes advantage of our British heritage to assume a self-deprecating approach that can add some needed humility to the corporate personality with understated humour, as only the Brits can do.
Mm-hmm.
So for the duration of this episode, we'll be rebranding the company. British Petroleum is now Twittish Petroleum, and the early research on that is very good indeed.
Humour plays well in dealing with a crisis?
Well, obviously, that's not the only arrow in our quiver.
Mm-hmm.
We've had quite a large virtual conversation on our corporate network on our new plans to stanch the flow of oil following the failure of the containment dome and the top hat.
And the junk shot.
Well, we never really tried that. It was a trial balloon floated in the media, and that's gone back to the science shop for renaming.
The word junk, was it turn-off?
It sounded as if we were dumping garbage in the Gulf, and I mean, who would do that?
Mm-hmm.
So in the queue for announcements this week are the turkey neck, so named because of the curved and wizened appearance of the pipe that protrudes from the underwater pump,
mm-hmm.
the tourniquet, which would literally attempt to constrict the pipe at the wellhead to strangle the leak, and the blind date.
And that is?
An underwater robot that inserts a probe into wherever it finds a weakness in the well structure.
Besides the place where it's leaking.
Yes, precisely. Not as weak as that point. Now, obviously, there's no guarantee that any of these procedures will succeed. In fact, our financial department is shorting the company's stock as a way of hedging that expectation of failure. And that's where we think the self-deprecation of Twittish Petroleum will, we think, inoculate us against more of a sense of failure. You know, one of the signature lines we're considering, if these procedures go pear-shaped, is, what do you expect from the Brits?
Does that attitude extend to BP's stance toward demands for greater and greater expenditures to compensate people and communities damaged by the leak?
Well, legal is spearheading that. It's not in my remit, but I do understand from the conference calls that they're adopting a slightly more robust posture in regard to possible litigation, which lead counsel described to me as cutting the plaintiffs off at the knees.
So, a dichotomy.
Well, corporate versatility.
Mm-hmm.
The finest orchestra in the world plays at more than one tempo.
Simon Pants, head of Task Force Gulf Cleanup Now. Thanks for joining us on the virtual trading floor.
Thank you, Sylvia. It's very quiet here.
Very. Mike? And for now, that's Mind Your Own Business for this week. Next time, the growth market and home foreclosures. Till then, I'm Mike Tuccinello saying, this week, mind the business of someone you love. So long.
One thing all kids love is Gloop. So why take them on a road trip to a vacation paradise that's got no Gloop? When you can take them to BP Attraction's hottest new destination, Tar Beachopolis. It's beach fun like you've never had it before.
Mom, this fur is like independent. Ooh, gloopy.
How's the water, kids?
It's sunshine, sea breeze, and plenty of Gloop.
Hey, dude, I'm surfing on sand. Way gloopy.
So fill up the car, pack the whole family in, and take them on a once-in-a-lifetime trip. Because Tar Beachopolis has to close when the Gloop goes. Tar Beachopolis, Florida's new play place, where the fun never slops.
Gloop may contain toluene, benzene, and other volatile compounds. Do not inhale. Ventilator sold separately.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, the President's Weekly Address. Now, from the President's Address, the President.
I just finished a half-hour telephone conversation with the British Prime Minister, or, as he would now like to be called, the Prime Minister, lest further anti-British sentiment be whipped up. During that conversation, he stressed to me the economic importance of the company formerly known as British Petroleum. I stressed to him in response the necessity for appearing to keep America's boot on that company's multinational neck. I told him that the American people have made it clear that they want their president to express their anger over this unprecedented environmental catastrophe. Earlier this week, you may have seen me in a television interview with Matt Lauer. He asked me if it was time for me to kick some butt. I responded that I was consulting with experts to find out the right asses to kick. That's the kind of response you can expect from your president as this crisis goes forward. Whenever strong language is called for, I will meet and exceed that call. But it's not just words that the American people expect at this time of ecological and economic disaster. It's action. That's why I'm going back to the Gulf Coast once again this week, my fourth visit in just over a month. While there, I will repeat my message to all responsible officials. Plug the damn leak. In case they don't grasp that clear message, I stand ready to use a stronger adjective than damn. If and when I do so, you will, if you choose, be the first to know. It's important for you, the American people, to understand just how angry I am about this mess, and have been since day one of my anger. I'm angry enough to impose a 6-month oil drilling moratorium on a state whose fishing industry has already been crippled, so we can take all the time we need to get past the midterm elections. I'm angry enough to throw this decorative BP paperweight right down on the floor. And as Prime Minister Cameron now appreciates, I'm angry enough to continue calling BP British Petroleum. Thanks, and have a good week.
Funds for this broadcast came from the Funds for This Broadcast Fund. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
And there was more. The international chairman of BP, Carl Eric Swanberg, intensified the public relations nightmare that Tony Hayward, the chief of BP, whatever segment of BP he was chief of, had brought upon himself. Swanberg had by stating that BP really did care about all the small people involved.
Small people. Small people.
Sure we care. We care deeply.
Small people.
We always try to be safe cheaply.
Small people.
Yes, they're small, but they're very peeply. There's an escrow fund for legitimate claims. We'll take numbers. We'll take names. Pay you faster than you've ever seen. Unless you've gone and hatched some smallish scheme. Small people.
Small people.
Shrimp, some catch fish.
Small people.
Get their lives back, that's our wish.
Small people.
They're the last folks that we want to squish. We'll hire you to clean our mess. And can you, if you talk to the press, we'll make you whole and make it right. But maybe after a little legal fight with small people.
Small people.
I grew up in Libya. I've lived here all my life.
Dani Shalid, BP's chief of North African diplomatic affairs.
When the whole Megrahi thing blew up, I knew we had a mess, and I knew we had to do everything we could to make it right.
It's $50,000. Don't talk to the media again.
It meant bringing in experienced skimmers from as far away as Las Vegas.
We'll take 10% off the top of our little contribution to you, because last time I checked, that was supposed to be our little secret.
And using the most sophisticated equipment available to clean it up.
All right, I'll blame it on the Scots, and they'll blame it on me. Just for the love of God, stop!
We at BP are committed to doing whatever it takes to avoid doing whatever it really takes. And that's my commitment, because I live here too, until they move me.
things proceeded apace in the area which we were now no longer supposed to call AFPAC this past year. Although there was a slight interruption when General Stanley McChrystal felt free enough to speak openly about his disdain for other government officials and government policy to a journalist from Rolling Stone, because, you know, that's what a commanding general does in a war, is talk openly to a guy from Rolling Stone and then complain about it. Soon after that, he was called on the carpet, and the carpet was located in the Oval Office.
The president will see you now, sir. Hello, General McChrystal.
Mr. President, have you been working out? My God, I run 4 miles a day. I thought I was fit.
Well, I have been able to play a few rounds of golf lately.
And I don't want to alarm you, sir, but isn't that Miss America walking through the hallway? Such charm, such poise. But does the Secret Service know about this? You know you can never be too safe, sir, in this time.
That was my wife heading back to the East Wing. Sit down, General.
Thank you, sir. But are you sure that wasn't Miss America? I mean, she had such youthful warmth, such...
General, we're here to talk about you.
Of course, sir. And speaking just for myself, I just have to say, I've never seen the Oval Office looking more perfectly oval. Bravo, sir. Well done.
Thanks. Now, General, there's this little matter of the interview in Rolling Stone. I'm sure you were tired after a long war.
Yes, sir.
But there... Well, these kinds of comments seem to represent an ingrained disrespect for the civilian part of your chain of command. That's a serious matter.
Of course it would be, sir, but the staff and I thought it reflected the sort of camaraderie, the joie de guerre, if you will, of our relationship, as a matter of fact. Was it Dave Petraeus himself who said it? I can't remember. I've been so busy harvesting people. But someone said he thought it showed a sign of deep maturity that you could take that kind of good-natured ribbing and just keep on leading us into the future,
General,
a future bright with the promise of little children playing with butterflies.
General, nobody thought it came across as good-natured ribbing. It was resentful, dismissive, and contemptuous.
Oh, I'm sure you're right, sir, and yet I can't help being reminded right now, sitting here with you and Miss America, the First Lady, of how resentful and dismissive and what was the other...
Contemptuous.
Right, the ribbing that Abbott used to give to Costello, and yet I don't know about you, sir, but underneath it I always felt the deep respect that Bud had for...
General, the media don't seem to view it as playful or fun or reflecting any kind of respect. So let's take their word for it, shall we?
Yes, sir, Mr. President, of course.
Good.
Sir, although I have to say, I always told my men when the media were depicting you in the middle of the healthcare fight as weak and vacillating, I said, no, men, don't cave into the natural human tendency to believe what the media says. Mm-hmm. They're sensationalizing our strong, determined, resolute president just to sell papers and get ratings. But yes, sir, I'll stand corrected on the media, sir. After all, it really is like the old Smuckers thing, isn't it, sir?
The Smuckers thing?
Yes, sir. With a name like Wolf Blitzer, you have to tell the truth.
All right, fine. So, now the question before us. What do I do about this situation? What action do I take? Now, on the one hand...
Sir, if I may, I've taken the liberty of outlining several alternative courses of action you could choose from. These are just some strategic possibilities my staff and I worked up over the weekend on the new iPad CENTCOM just sent us, sir, which, by the way, I know sometimes military procurement can be a pain in the A double snakes, but if we'd had the iPad at HQ 7 years ago, we'd be out of Afghanistan long
before. All right, General, let's hear your suggested courses of action.
Thank you, sir. And these aren't written in stone, of course, sir. Your people can tweak them and, you know, whatever.
Let's just hear them, please. We just have 20 minutes.
First, a complete and final banning of all reporters from the headquarters area of the war effort,
which is totally impractical.
Oh, I was just going to say exactly those words, sir, but I was out quick by my commander-in-chief. But a complete and final ban on all reporters from Rolling Stone, sir. Now you've really put your finger on the problem and you've squashed it like so many unfortunate civilians, sir.
General,
yes,
Rolling
sir.
Stone has done their hit piece. They're not coming back.
Yes, sir.
What else?
Well, you could put me on, and I hesitate to say these words, sir, because you know how single-mindedly I'm dedicated to warfighting, sir, but you could put me on temporary leave, send me to Pearl Harbor or CENTCOM headquarters in Tampa, totally out of the action, totally removed from
someplace quiet and sunny.
Sir, Is that what you think? You think my staff and I are suggesting you give me a paid vacation on the backs of the hard-working Americans who play by the rules? All right, sir. You're right. I agree. Oh. Send me off for 2 weeks in Nome. Why didn't I think of that? What's the matter with me? Bad general. Bad general.
General, we're not sending you off to Nome.
Yes, sir. I agree. Too soft. Ketchikan, sir? I could build it there with an old army buddy, Doug Dimmeldorf.
What?
Runs a salmon boning facility up there, sir. Very smart. Really do me good. Might teach me a lesson, sir.
You're not going to billet with Doug Dimmeldorf, General.
No, sir.
You're going to be removed from your post.
I...
It would be an unmistakable signal of weakness on my part to leave you in charge. We know that. The polls tell us that.
Yes, sir. I'm sure the men can... carry on without me. Mm-hmm. Best thing for them, really.
Mm-hmm.
Try to conduct a sophisticated counterinsurgency operation on their own, because really, you know, at some point you really do have to take the training wheels off the bicycle, don't you, sir? You know, let the kids take a crack at it. What do we have to lose, really?
And you'll be replaced by General Petraeus.
Dave!
Mm-hmm.
Good choice, sir. Get him back in the field before he gets any more cobwebs from that desk job, sir. Of course, he'll need me for a few months to get him up to...
General, you're dismissed from your post as of now. That is all.
Yes, sir. Spoken like a true commander, sir. I give you that. All right, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your service.
Oh, sir, it was my pleasure to kill myself for my country just to be thrown away like an old snot rag, sir.
No.
Oh, look! Miss America is still there, sir. Maybe you should ask her what she would...
Goodbye, General.
They come from somewhere else. Who knows where? They come in the dozens, or the millions, who knows how many. And they come for one reason, to be born. Terror babies.
Okay, Doctor, the mother should be coming out of sedation. But...
But what, nurse? I'm busy with all this damn paperwork.
Look at the baby.
Nonsense. It's just banging its fingers on my computer keyboard.
Doctor, look at the screen.
Oh, my God. It's accessing jihadist websites.
They're born in the USA, and their name tags may look like ours. But underneath, they're all named Stan.
Gio, why was it so important for me to meet you in maternity?
You know Doug Randall, our tech whiz?
Sure. He's kind of cute, but...
He's figured out a way to interpret what they're saying.
Who?
Shh. The babies. Listen.
Let me confide you that some playground.
And Justin, you bring the fertilizer.
Nobody could make this up. And yet, somebody did. Terror babies. You nurse them. They kill you. Starring nobody you ever heard of. And coming next weekend, The Fear You Can Touch. Terror Babies 3D. So incredible. It's unbelievable. Only in political theaters.
And yet, that was the subject of a great national debate. Or at least, thanks to the Tea Party part. Sectional debate this year. This is the year in rebuke, ladies and gentlemen, taking moments out for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Former Obama administration auto czar Stephen Ratner agreed this week to apologize and pay $10 million to settle civil charges brought by the New York Attorney General for his participation in a pay-to-play scheme to win business from New York State's pension fund. The settlement caps a protracted and acrimonious confrontation between Ratner and new governor of New York, former Attorney General Andrew Cuomo. At the center of the clash were allegations that Ratner, a founder of the Quadrangle Group, paid kickbacks and orchestrated a distribution deal for a movie to win tens of millions of dollars in business from a pension fund. Too confusing. Just apologize for the confusement. Dateline Lima, Peru, a top diplomat, says Washington has apologized to Peru for leaked diplomatic cables about Peru. Arturo Valenzuela, assistant U.S. Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, told a Peruvian radio station that he and Secretary of State Clinton spoke with Peruvian officials about the matter A cable released by WikiLeaks said President Alan Garcia had, quote, a colossal ego. Hey, who doesn't? Was rumored to suffer from manic depression or bipolar disorder and may have had, quote, numerous extramarital affairs. Another reported speculation linking Peru's military chief to drug corruption. He denies the allegation. Hey, these military guys seem to like drug smuggling. And Will Selva, an anchor for ESPN News, has been sidelined after apparently plagiarizing, a Christmas show? No, several sentences of an Orange County Register newspaper column this week. He said in a statement that he'd made, quote, a horrible mistake by copying and pasting the text of the story and forgetting to then write a script in his own words. Those things can slip your mind, can't they? Will? Selva quickly acknowledged the copying. As I often do, I research local stories to use as background for writing my script. In this case, I cut and pasted the story with every intention of writing my own. I simply forgot. I sincerely apologize for my sloppiness, especially to Kevin Ding, the writer of the column in question, viewers and colleagues. In my 15 years in broadcast journalism, nothing like this has ever happened, and I will make every effort to ensure it won't happen again. ESPN has made more effort to make sure it won't happen again. He hasn't anchored any news broadcasts since Tuesday. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And a new Supreme Court justice was nominated and eventually approved, but not before a debate over, again, among a certain segment of Americans, a debate over whether there were now to be too many Jewish members of the Supreme Court.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, at Loggerheads. Conflicting opinions evenly matched according to the diametric system. Today, if Elena Kagan is confirmed, will there be too many Jews on the Supreme Court? From the left, Joan Rivers. From the right, Yakov Smirnoff.
Joan, first time I heard it sounded like ridiculous topic for debate. I thought only place there could be too many Jews is at a mikveh in Brooklyn. But public radio money was inducement to think again. Supreme Court is a unique institution in American life. They serve for life, insulated from all political pressure, yet major influence on how we live. Only thing like it in Russia is president's in-laws. What a country. So why shouldn't court be more representative of America, more Protestants, more Mormons? If we keep going the way we're going, pretty soon white guys in Supreme Court building will be scarce as orchids in Moscow. In Russia, flowers plant you. Don't get me wrong, I've got nothing against more Jews anywhere. Major League Baseball could use some. In Russia, sports bet on you. For that matter, Branson, Missouri could use some Jews. Justice Ginsburg would give you your own theater. In Russia, theater walk out on you. What a country. I know better than anyone else many Jewish people drawn to legal profession. You need to be smart, very verbal, like to argue to succeed in that work. If you don't believe me, ask my ex-wife. In Russia, ex-wife supports you. I wish. But USA is such a great melting pot, and especially at Supreme Court, we need more in the pot than matzo ball soup. Joan?
Yakov, first I heard of this topic, I thought, wait a minute, last time I saw this many Jews in robes, it was at the pool of the Doral Hotel for the Goyim that's in Miami. But my God, the people who are saying there should be more Protestants on the court, aren't these the same people who hate quotas, who said there shouldn't be fewer black men working in bathrooms? Personally, I'm proud that lawyers practicing in the Supreme Court are going to have to look up with awe and respect to a couple of short Jewish women. Why should Jewish men have all its sores? Although God knows they could take a couple of hours out from reading briefs to at least look in a mirror. I mean, Justice Ginsburg, my God, I've heard of dressing like Mother of the Bride, but not Mother of the Corpse. Please. And you know, Yakov, it's not so long ago the court was as much of a no-Jews-allowed zone as the L.A. Country Club. All putts. So we should just relax. In a few years, maybe there'll be two or three Mexican Catholics on the court, and we'll be worrying about closing down the Supreme Court cafeteria because the judges are eating lunch out of a truck. What counts is what's between the ears. and between the toes. Ugh, somebody tell Kagan a pedicure wouldn't kill her. From the left, I'm Joan Rivers.
And from the right, I'm Yakov Smirnoff. We both like to be asked to be at loggerheads.
At Loggerheads is produced with help of a grant from the Other Hand Foundation. On the other hand, that's where you'll find us. Next time, another issue that throws off sparks sets the studio ablaze. At Loggerheads. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio. Public radio for the rest of us.
Would you like a house?
Okay.
Here you go.
Oh.
Big enough?
It's very big.
It's yours.
Really?
Sure. Just as long as you... Oh, oops. You didn't keep up with the payments.
What payments?
Uh-oh, somebody didn't read the fine print.
I didn't see any.
No, we're gonna have to foreclose. Give me the house.
I want the house. It's mine.
Ask your little friend here. He signed the foreclosure form.
You did?
Yep, he's the notary. He signed 1,000 of them just this morning.
You're not a notary.
Sure am.
Even kids know this is no way to treat a trusted borrower whose loan we sliced into 14 different pieces and sold to investors on 3 continents. That's why we're different from the other banks. At Alley Bank, we're worse. Our foreclosure forms wouldn't fool a kid. Luckily, they don't have to. It may not be the right thing to do, but it's just the thing we do. Alley Bank, we're in the gutter with you. Member FDIC.
This is LeShow, and this is the year in rebuke, 2010. That was the year we had, right? 2010? Okay, just checking. And around the middle of the year, President Obama paid a visit to one of those late-night chat shows that abound these days, and was asked, would he, knowing what he now knows about the presidency, would he campaign differently? And his response was, I would say, this is the president talking now, yes, we can, but.
We've been warned against offering the people of this nation false hope.
But here's what I think is fair, that over the last 2 years, in an emergency situation, our basic attitude was, we've got to get some things done. But in order to do that, basically worked with the process as opposed to transform the process. And there's no doubt that frustrated folks. But yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
But.
Yes, we can.
But.
Yes, we can.
But.
Yes, we can.
But.
It frustrates me. I think what I would say is,
yeah.
It's not going to happen overnight.
It's not going to happen overnight.
But. Harry Summers did a heck of a job, pun intended, but, you know, I'm feeling great about where the American people are considering what we've gone through.
But
I mean, we've gone through the two toughest years of any time since the Great Depression, and in light of that, the fact that people have been resilient, that folks are still out there working, and opening businesses, you know, working in the community, looking after their families, taking care of their responsibilities, that's encouraging. So there's still a lot of good stuff happening. But
yes, we can.
But
yes, we can.
But
yes, we can.
But
Yes, we can.
People are frustrated. You know, a lot of folks are hurting out there still. And, you know, in that environment, I think that they're hoping that we can do a little bit better here in Washington than we've been doing.
But,
yes, we can. But,
yes, we can.
But,
yes, we can.
But,
yes, we can.
But.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Below the Beltway. Below the Beltway, behind the scenes of the scenes in our nation's capital. I'm Milton Getzler. And this week we're pulling open the curtain on the behind-the-scenes activity right here at CPR, after another public radio network jettisoned its name and retained only its initials. Officials here at CPR launched a network-wide brainstorming session, or as it's called inside these walls, a think stock. Here's CPR's special correspondent, Aviva Schlorman, who followed all the inaction from close range.
The question was simple. Should CPR retain its full name, Continental Public Radio, or just be known from now on by its initials? The network's think stock brought in experts on everything from marketing to communications. CPR's Vice President for Marketing, Development, and Parking Resources, Harlow Marlowe, argued in favor of dumping the historic name.
Over the past quarter century, we've succeeded in making the letter CPR the seventh best-known brand at all of public radio. Now, in a new digital age, people don't have time for legacy names. It's been a long time since CBS called itself the Columbia Broadcasting System or NBC the National Broadcasting System. Q ratings, the E Channel, O Magazine, America's media environment has been completely and thoroughly initialized. Now, there's an imaging war going on here in the American mindscape, and we don't think CPR should be left on that battlefield too encumbered by its heavy burden of nomenclature to be in the fight, just squirming and wheezing in the dust while its fundraising flatlines. Now, frankly, if it were me, we'd even dump the last two initials and just be known as C. But in taking the temperature around this building, that appears to be too radical, too soon. Some say too hip-hop.
CPR's Ira Zipkin, fresh from a year-long fellowship at the Columbia School of Public Broadcasting, reported on the results of a poll CPR commissioned on the subject of its name. Some people may wonder why CPR thought it was worth spending increasingly scarce money on a poll about what to call itself. So, to be fair, we asked our poll respondents about that, too. Those numbers are still being recrunched. But on the main topic of the name, a full 40% of our sample gets much of our content online. So they thought the name radio in the CPR name was passé, or worse. 27% said they associated the word public in the context of broadcasting with reruns of John Tesh concerts. We're still analyzing whether that's a positive or a negative. But on the other hand, 72% of our folks associate the letters CPR with heart attacks. So what our polling told us in a nutshell is that we needed to do a lot more polling. Justin Blassengame is CPR's in-house branding expert. He came up with the titles of our media review program, Media Nation, and our car Q&A broadcast, Auto Nation. He tackled the confusion over the meaning of the initials with energy and money.
Some people were arguing in our breakout sessions that the confusion with cardiopulmonary resuscitation was a deal breaker, a game ender, a beta blocker. To me, it was a branding challenge, right? So we came up with a campaign to run in important newspapers and centrist websites that didn't hide from the confusion but would meet it head on, right? The first treatment was CPR is not just for breathing anymore. We did it doesn't expand your lungs, it expands your world. And then we also did some playful things with the letters themselves. So, for example, we pulled the C out of the logo and did a treatment around it that said, see what you're hearing. Then, of course, our focus group said, aha, well, okay, you're not for heart attacks, you're for deaf people. So back to the blank screen one more time.
The whole process took an entire fiscal quarter. At the end, the network reached a very surprising conclusion.
You know, when I delivered those opening remarks, I thought it was slam dunk to dump the name. But the more we drilled down, the more it looked like a wild three-pointer that bounced off the rim. We've got a legacy name. We've got equity in the legacy. And no matter what people associate when they hear that name, they don't assume an ambulance is coming. So we are proudly Continental Public Radio again, at least until we revisit the whole question next year.
So now that you know what to call us, don't forget to call us. And please give. I'm Aviva Schlorman.
And for now, that's all there is to see below the Beltway. We had help today from the Last Ditch Foundation. We give when others won't. Join us next time we take a peek behind the Capitol's curtains below the Beltway. I'm Milton Getzler. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Without a doubt, the big good news, feel-good news story of the year was the rescue and return to the surface of more than 30 Chilean miners trapped underground for, I believe, about 8 weeks. It made everybody feel good. And so the question is, can we keep feeling good?
Mining the miners down Chile way.
And there's gold in that there hole.
Got to be inside Extra Access tonight for the middle of October 2010.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. Back on my meds.
This week, the good news story of the year belonged to the news channels as 33 Chilean miners were rescued on live TV and got ratings worthy, if not of the Super Bowl, maybe of the Oscar red carpet pre-show. That's gold. And if there's one thing Hollywood knows, it's how to manufacture more of that.
Producers from here to Amsterdam have been burning the midnight oil, designing the shows that can keep that feel-good feeling or something like it burning bright during the dark winter months ahead. Here's an exclusive IEAT sampling of what's in store.
Sure, we saw the miners when they emerged from their capsule, but who did we focus on during the long hours of waiting? The miners' wives.
Canada Jacoby is producing a show for the Nitrogen Channel called Miners' Wives.
I mean, yes, on the one hand, we do send the wives down to the room or the area or space, whatever it is, where these men were trapped for 2 months, and they're living there together. A couple differences. One, we bring a team of designers from our sister show, Does This Room Make Me Look Fat, to totally make over that space. So, no, it's not the Ritz, and they're still stuck down there. But at least it's got some pizzazz. Horrible word, I hate it, but that's what it is. Since we know there's a video feed down there, half our work is already done for us. We'll see how these women cope. Who's the villainess? Who's the heroine? Who bonds with who? You know, all the classic themes. Then the viewers vote their favorite woman each week out of the hole. She comes up in the capsule, and there's her husband to greet her, and maybe the president of Chile, if we can come up with the right number. And yes, it's a total flip of the old reality formula. The sooner you get voted out, the better. We just think that's magic.
We know how well these miners cooperated with each other when it meant saving their lives. What I think everybody wants to know is how well they can compete against each other to win really big money.
Zach Riefenstahl is director of programming for TAC, formerly the Arts Channel.
The shtummy of the show is that it's a great big money competition built around the capsule. I mean, we know how much anxiety these guys felt in that thing. Now, put 33 of them on a huge stage with lights and music, a very jacked up studio audience. The guys are sealed in their capsules, no air conditioning. Maybe week three, there's even mold on the walls or something. And each guy has to tell us a secret about one of the others. I mean, that's what we got so far. Just that much has got the reps of the guys very interested. Whoever stays in his capsule longest gets $1 million, and the rest of them get Buicks or something.
The capsule is tentatively penciled in on the TAC schedule for January, or as soon as they can get the capsules built.
Well, of course, the minute we knew these men would survive, the question became, how do they readjust to life above ground?
Pearson McGrath runs the new cable channel CBC America. His project is called Fitting In.
Our notion is to take them all to a resort, very picturesque, subject them all to a set of challenges, just to find the five whom we want to follow back home on the whole fitting in angle. So you get the great beach resort look, which we can flash back to whenever we need a bit of splash. And then we get our five hero guys. Of course, they're all heroes, but I mean in the TV sense. And we follow them for 2 months. We're in their homes, their therapy sessions, their nights out with other guys. If things are going too easily, we might throw them a curveball, you know, have a mine official deny them their compensation payment or something, just to test their new coping skills. And of course we have psychologists on staff, so this really does have the flavor of a real experiment. But there's always the great beach footage.
Fitting In will try fitting into CBC America's spring schedule, which also includes Growing Up Mulrooney.
We had some minor difficulties, but that's inside extra access tonight. For tonight.
Tomorrow, we come rolling back with the results of our latest IEAT Twitter poll.
We asked you who your favorite new American Idol judge is.
And the answer will have you asking for a jury trial.
Till then, I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. So long from Culver City.
And as the year wore on and it became evident that President Obama and the Democrats were having electoral problems in November. There were conversations in the White House about which way to go now. And on his way out, Presidential Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel no doubt had one of those conversations.
Yeah, you just tell him to F himself with a barbed hockey stick. Hello, sir.
Rahm?
What's up? Where's the spark? Oh. We agreed the key in this part of the election cycle was to not lose the spark. Mm-hmm. I see zero spark.
Yeah, I know. Pod a spark.
Well, all due respect, I don't think your father needs spark right now. It's you.
Sorry, I went French on you.
Yeah, well, I won't tell Bob Woodward if you don't. Now what? Why'd you text me? I was in the middle of everything.
Well, I texted you, first of all, because I can. Because no matter what else happens, I will go down in history as the first president with a smartphone.
Okay, good. We'll make sure Mount Rushmore has one behind your ear. And then second?
Second, because I went out this week, did my town hall meeting, mm-hmm. I did my speeches. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of had the spark. Michelle, to the contrary, notwithstanding. And yet, we haven't moved the needle at all. I mean, Fox News has me at 37%.
Sir, mm-hmm. What have we agreed on every time this comes up?
I forget. That's the kind of mood I...
If San Francisco has a frickin' earthquake that's a 10 on the Richter scale, it's not going to move the needle on Fox News.
Mm-hmm. Richter doesn't go above 8.
You know, I can make a call. You can be on Jeopardy within an hour. Look, honestly, uh-huh. I'm juggling a whole different set of balls right now.
Right? All right.
I'm focusing on stuffing Jesse Jackson Jr.'s cojones in his mouth and making him think it's goose liver pate. But you want literally my 2 cents on this?
I mean, I thought I was fired up this week. I just didn't feel ready to go, I guess.
Okay. You've got a freaking cabinet with all the TV appeal of roadkill.
Mm.
You've got no surrogates worth squat. It's all on you. And, sir, Ramagram for you, sir. You're still a great salesman. You're just burdened with pushing a crap bag product.
Mm.
You heard that woman at the town hall. She still likes you.
Mm-hmm.
She just doesn't like what you're selling.
What? My administration? The Democratic Congress?
Patience. Frickin' patience.
Hey, I'm still the president. I'm entitled to an answer
You're selling patience to a freaking country that doesn't do anything like patience. You'd do better pitching Botox to a effing baboon.
Mm. I don't know.
I do. Mm. The economists say the recession is over and the jobs are a lagging indicator. People without jobs don't feel like any kind of effing indicator. You're telling them to be patient. No. You got a freaking war that's going south because the Taliban are going north. You're telling the voters to be patient.
Although, in fairness, we're still sticking to the July 2011 deadline for starting the removal of, you know, something. Oh, speaking of which, give me a second. Darcy, please get me Bob Gates.
Yes, sir.
Look, Mr. O, no. This is no skin off the top of my anything, but patience sounds like something Jimmy Carter sold. What did Reagan push when the economy was in the freaking toilet? He was Mr. Sunshine and Optimism. He was the recovery. Or at least he played one on TV.
Hold on.
Mr. President, it's Bob Gates.
Hi, Bob. Rom's here with me.
For the moment.
I know the feeling. Hi, Rom. Yes, Mr. President, I left a budget meeting.
I'll tell you what's up, Bob. Your people, from General Petraeus on down, are leaking all over the place that our December Afghanistan review is going to be a review in name only.
Well, I thought that was a pretty fair approximation to where we left it.
So did I, but exactly what's supposed to happen if, let's say, the President of the United States wants to change his mind and have a real review. You know, I'm being boxed in by your guys. It has to stop. Pronto-ish.
Ish.
Shush.
Mr. President, I'm trying to ram some budget discipline down this building's throat before I leave.
No, I know.
What you're asking for amounts to a pretty heavy lift, especially since a lot of your people seem to have leaked all over Bob Woodward how much they don't believe in a war or my guys are trying to fight for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got a point.
And how you wrote your own 16-page policy for my guys because you didn't trust them not to expand the mission.
Yeah, well, see, I thought that made me look pretty damn engaged.
Oh, that it did.
All right, so
it did.
Do you guys need me to put it in writing that they better not leak or it's General McChrystal time for?
Yes.
Mr. President, I'm not a betting man.
No.
But the betting men in this building think Stanley McChrystal's the final general that you can afford to fire.
Hmm. What is it, sort of 7-3 type odds?
Heavier.
Mm. Okay.
Sir, if I may, when December comes, and if you want to have a real review, just blame it on conditions on the ground. That's code for my guy screwed up. They'll get the message.
You think?
20-1.
Okay, Bob. Thanks.
See, this is why you're selling a bad effing product.
What are you talking about?
You think you can sell patience because you've got some. Ugh. Either that or you just got rolled over by a freaking outgoing member of your chicken scat cabinet.
I don't know, Brom. Feels like everybody is quitting on me right around now, is barreling down the lane at me. Don't you think?
I don't know, sir. Ask Jesse freaking Jackson freaking Jr. You know, nice work correcting the quotes in your rug.
You think somebody around here could fact-check historic quotes?
Look, think about it. You don't have to be right.
No.
You just have to freaking sell freaking Sonny.
And we end this look at the year in rebuke the way we started it, with BP and specifically Tony Hayward, who looked back in rancor at the well called Macondo.
I should have been yachting. I should have been chilling. I did the right thing, and they made me a villain. I want my life back, away from the gusher. They gave me my life back. They sent it to Russia. Oh, Macondo, into you my career fell. Macondo, you really were the well from hell. We paid off the experts, and we shut out the newsies. We counted the damage in onesies and twosies. I want my life back, an end to the racket. All I got was this deep water horizon. Macondo, who imagined you'd leak and spill? Macondo, never alive, but so hard to kill. We cut a few corners and we saved a few bulb. All at once I'm as bad as the boss of a mob. I love my children. We talk and we text. I've got my life back. And the book dealer's next. Oh, Macondo, hope that you again I'll never see. Macondo, till I start taping for A and E.
Well, what a nutty fabulous year, ladies and gentlemen. Let's share another one, what do you say? That concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. And it'd be just like us repeating exactly the same behavior for another 365 days if you could agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, in exile, and Hawaii desks for their assistance throughout the year. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Adrian Bodnam, Bodders, here at Global Radio in London for help with today's broadcast. Want to know the music that's played on this broadcast? Want to know how to get in touch with the host via email? Check it out. That's all at harryshearer.com. And Le Show is on Twitter at TheHarryShearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from London.